teach you a song, and I think nobody knows this song except for me and Cindy, but it's a really good one, and at the beginning of the lesson, at the end of the lesson, we're going to sing it, okay? So it goes like this. You were despised, you were rejected, Lord, those who passed by even averted their gaze from your sight. Such was the suffering you bore for us. Led like a lamb to the slaughter, you spoke not a word. Chose to be silent, though you did no wrong. Nor was deceitfulness found in you. Yet by your wounds our salvation has come. Yet by your suffering our freedom is won. For God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. Led like a lamb to the slaughter, you spoke not a word. Chose to be silent, though you did no wrong. Nor was deceitfulness found in you. Yet by your wounds our salvation has come. Yet by your suffering our freedom is won. For God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. Yet by your wounds our salvation has come. Yet by your suffering our freedom is won. For God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. You were despised, you were rejected, Lord, those who passed by even averted their gaze from your sight. Such was the suffering you bore for us. So, this lesson is called Not My Will But Yours, and it's focusing on the prayer of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Before we get into the lesson, I just want to tell you a little bit about our trip. We went to upstate New York to a place called Camp Hunt, which has been in existence since 1947. So it's around 75 years, 72, I think, years. This is a panorama of one of the glorious sunsets that we had there this year. A highlight of our time there was that our granddaughter Lydia was baptized into Christ while we were there. There is Lydia and her father, my son, our son, John. who is the director of the camp. This is one of my classes. I had the older boys, so 14 to 17 years old. This day I had 9, but normally that particular week I had 10. This is not the same class as the next one I'm going to tell you about, but I didn't have a picture of them. So just think of the same, about the same number of guys, different faces, okay? And I put up on the board the first day of class, we're going to keep it very simple. So basically, I had 3 words that I wanted them to remember all week long. Simple is the first word. The second word was team. We're going to work together as a team. We're going to we're not going to be competing with one another in our class, and we're not going to be putting each other down. We're just going to be working together as a team. And the third word is runga. You don't know this word, I guess, but it was an acronym for all of the lessons that we were going to have for the week. And the R, the basic idea of the week was the last words of Jesus. So many of the last words of Jesus we were going to talk about that week. Not all of them, but some of them. And the first word was, the first day of the class was, remember me. So we talked about the institution of the Lord's Supper and Jesus' desire for people to remember remember what he said and to remember him and the things that he did. The second day was unite us. So the prayer of Jesus in John 17, that all his followers be united. And the third day was not my will but yours. And that's what got me thinking about doing this lesson, because we had a day to think about the prayer of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And the fourth day was good or done, which is Jesus says on the cross, it is finished. And the implication and the meaning of that. And the fifth day, all is forgiven, where Jesus confronts Peter after the resurrection and forgives him for his denial of him 3 times and gives him the opportunity to recommit himself to follow Jesus. So every day for that week, we remembered runga, and then we had to go through what each one of those meant, okay? So here's kind of an overview of the lesson that was dealing with the third day of that class. The Olive Press Prayer, 4 versions. We're going to talk about the fact that it's not the first time that Jesus expressed this attitude of not my will but yours be done. And then we're going to talk about the significance of it as the offering of a high priest in our behalf. And then the fourth part is that it serves as a model for us. Okay? So first, we're going to look at the 4 versions of the Olive Press Prayer. If you look in Mark 14, Matthew 26, Luke 22, these are different versions of this prayer, and they're a little bit different from each other. Mark says, Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will. In Matthew, Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And in Luke, Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but not my will, but yours be done. What they all have in common, it's kind of strange that the NIV translates it yet, but the Greek word there that's translated yet is but. And my Greek teacher taught us this. He says there are 2 ways to say but in the Greek language. One is but, and the other one is but. And guess which one it is in this case? It's the but, okay? So Jesus says, take this cup from me, but not my will, but yours be done, okay? So that's Matthew, Mark, and Luke. If you look in John, there's nothing about the Gethsemane prayer in the Gospel of John. The closest thing that we have in John is in chapter 12, where Jesus says this, and this was a week or more before the crucifixion. "Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, for this, it was for this reason that I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name." And then a voice came from heaven and said, "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." That's in John chapter 12. That's basically the same thing as what Jesus said in the garden when he said, "Not my will, but yours be done. Take this cup from me. Father, save me from this hour." And Father, glorify your name is another way of saying, "Not by my will, but yours be done." Okay? So those are the four versions of this prayer that Jesus made in the Garden of Gethsemane. Gethsemane means wine, olive press. And there's some symbolism there that many have suggested that Jesus went through a time of testing in the garden, and it was like he was the olive that was being crushed by the great stone rolling over him as he contemplated the sacrifice that he was about to give. So think in these terms, and I want you to repeat after me as we go through, and I'll ask you to do this several times through the lesson. Not my will, but yours be done. Say it with me. Not my will, but yours be done. Okay? So this is not the first time that Jesus had this attitude throughout his ministry. If you go back to the very beginning of his ministry, immediately after his baptism, this is Mark chapter 1, verses 14 and 15. Here's what the text says. It says, "At once the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness, and he was in the wilderness 40 days being tempted by Satan, and he was with the wild animals, and angels attended him." Focus on the opening phrase of this passage, and what Mark is telling us is the Spirit sent him out into the wilderness. The Greek is stronger than that. The word sent is really through. I mean, just think of, and this is how we remember this word. The word is balo. Just think of throwing a ball. You know, the Spirit threw him out into the wilderness. He cast him, pushed him. And, you know, if Jesus was aware, and we assume that he was, of what was going to happen in the wilderness, you think he wanted to be there? Do you think he wanted to fast for 40 days and be tempted by Satan? I don't think so. But he was willing to do that. He went, he allowed the Spirit to shove him out into the wilderness because, come on, say it with me, not my will, but yours be done, okay? This is much later in the ministry of Jesus in John chapter 8, where at the beginning of chapter 8, 8 verse 12, he says, "I am the light of the world." And he is proclaiming himself pretty openly in Jerusalem. And he says, "When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you will know that I am he, and that I do nothing on my own, but speak just what the Father has taught me. The one who sent me is with me, and he has not left me alone." And look at this phrase, "I always do what pleases him." So what was his attitude in Jerusalem? His attitude was, "Not my will, but yours be done." Then Jesus receives the news that the one he loves, Lazarus, is sick, and he's been called to come. His disciples object when Jesus says, "Let's go back to Judea." They say, "But Rabbi, a short while ago, those Jews were trying to stone you, and yet you're going back?" And Jesus answers, Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light. What Jesus is saying is, God has a work for me to do, and that work, in this case, has to do with the family of Lazarus and raising Lazarus from the dead, as it turns out. So his attitude then was, not my will, but yours be done. And we could multiply the examples, okay? I've just given you three, but we could spend a long time looking at different times when Jesus obviously was not doing what he wanted, but doing what the Father wanted. But let's focus a little bit on a passage in Hebrews chapter 5, which explains what Jesus prayed in terms of his being our high priest. This is Hebrews chapter 5, verse 7. It says, during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. The word offered up is the same word that is used for a priest offering a sacrifice. Okay? It's not a normal word for offer. It's a priestly kind of word. He's offering up these prayers. And the last phrase in chapter 5, verse 7 is, and he was heard. And then there's a disagreement about how the rest of it should be translated. One way of translating it is same as NIV. It says, from his reverent submission. But the word is from eulabaeus, and eulabaeus can either mean reverence or it can mean fear. And so when it says he was heard from fear, might mean he was heard and delivered from fear or rescued from fear. This word is used a lot in the Old Testament, though not as much in the New Testament, not at all in the New Testament, except for this passage. With the idea of being afraid. Like, for example, back in 1 Samuel, it says that when Saul realized how popular David was, he was eulabaeus. He was fearful. Okay, he was afraid. And you can't really put reverence into that passage. It doesn't fit so well. But the idea of anxious, fearing for his life, being afraid, does fit, and if that's what this verse means, then it's saying that when Jesus was praying with these loud cries and pouring out his heart to God, God's answer to that prayer was delivering Jesus from fear. And the rest of what happened to Jesus, his betrayal, his trial, and his crucifixion, in all of that drama that we see from that point on, we know that he never displays any fear whatsoever, okay? So that kind of fits in with what happened. So that is a possible translation of this passage and fits with the history of what took place. So if we ask ourselves, how was Jesus' prayer answered? It was either answered yes or it was answered no. If it was answered yes, then the idea seems to be that he was delivered from the fear that he had of death. If it was answered no, then it's saying you are going to have to die. I'm not going to answer this by taking the cup away, but I'm going to restore you after your death. But there's another way of looking at it, and that way has to do with two levels of desire, or two levels of the petition of Jesus. The first level being the lower level of his request. The low-level petition had to do with recoiling from the horror of his suffering and death, so that he says, take this cup from me. And God's answer to that is no. But then Jesus says, but not my will, but yours be done. And that higher level petition is focusing on the mission that Jesus had and then the mission that the Father had for him. And that God answered, yes. I will accomplish my will in the things that happen as you submit to me. So really there's two levels here, and God answers no to one and yes to the other. And Hebrews goes on to say, even though he was a son, he learned obedience from what he suffered, and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him, and was designated by God to be high priest in the order of Melchizedek. So the context is leading us to ask the question, why would Jesus' suffering in the Garden of Gethsemane qualify him to be a high priest? And the answer seems to be along these lines, that Jesus' suffering in the garden was closely identifying him with us and the horror and the terror that we have about death. Few verses later, it talks about how he delivered us from our fear of death. Okay? He was delivered from his fear of death and associated with us in feeling that with us and for us, and in accomplishing the mission that he had in mind and that the Father had for him. He offered up this petition to God and qualified to be our high priest in doing so. So, how does that become a model for us as believers today? Is there a place in Gethsemane for us? Do we belong there? Is there ever a place where we pray that same prayer? Think of this passage in Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8, and there are many other passages that say the same thing or suggest the same idea, that we should set aside what we want and allow God to accomplish his purpose within us. But this one is one of the strongest ones. Philippians 2, verses 5 through 8, he says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage, but rather made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant and being made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Even though this passage is saying a lot about Jesus and it's saying about his equality with God and his emptying himself, notice at the very beginning it's saying that's a model. Paul is talking about this as a model for us. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. In other words, this is the way we should, the attitude that we should have. Our attitude should be, not my will, but yours be done. So let's sing this song again as we conclude our lesson. And if stand up with me and we'll sing it together and encourage one another to have this attitude in the relationships that you have in your family. What attitude? Not my will, but yours be done. In the relationships you have on the job, your attitude should be a prayer to God, not my will, but yours be done. In the attitude you have toward people that you meet, in your daily life, not my will, but yours be done. In your personal devotion to the Lord and your willingness to let him shape your character, your attitude should be, not my will, but yours be done. You were despised, you were rejected, Lord, those who passed by even averted their gaze from your side. Such was the suffering you bore for us. led like a lamb. Lamb to the slaughter, you spoke not a word. Chose to be silent, though you did no wrong. Nor was deceitfulness found in you. Yet by your wounds our salvation has come. Yet by your suffering our freedom is won. For God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. God has highly exalted your name. He has enthroned you on high. Jesus, the name above all names. Got to go back one. And it's not working. Can you take us back? One slide. Thank you. No. I think so. I'm sorry. You were despised, you were rejected, Lord, those who passed by even averted their gaze from your side. Such was the suffering you bore for us. All right. Thank you. I could give up. Yeah, but...